George Washington's contributions to America are legendary. Without his military and presidential leadership, it would be hard to imagine where we would be as a country today. What's not well known about Washington is his entrepreneurial spirit and business acumen, which informed his decisions as a young man throughout the Revolutionary War for the entirety of his presidency and up until his death in 1799. In the new book, First Entrepreneur, How George Washington Built His and the Nation's Prosperity, Edward Lengel makes great use of Washington's often overlooked financial papers to show how the United States was conceived in business, founded on business, and operated as a business. Ed Lengel is the director of the Papers of George Washington at the University of Virginia. Again, the title of the new book is First Entrepreneur, and we welcome Edward Lengel to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, too. Thank you.
What brought you to this particular subject, this particular aspect of Washington's life?
Well, I'm director of the Washington Papers Project at the University of Virginia, and we've been working on Washington's correspondence, his daily correspondence, for many years. We've been in the Revolutionary War, which fits me because I'm primarily a military historian by training. But a few years ago, we started work on editing and publishing his financial papers, which nobody had looked at before. Nobody had ever published them before, certainly. And as I looked at this vast collection of financial documentation, I got a sense of how important his business ventures were to him, and also what an impact he had on his times as a businessman and as an entrepreneur.
You talk in the book about his ability to transform shortcomings into strengths. Give us a sense of that and how really that lack of formal education ultimately helped him.
It's interesting that he always regretted his lack of a formal education. He had wanted to have a standard, rather liberal arts education in London like many of his peers did. He didn't get that because his father died when he was only 11. So what George actually got was a very practical education in things like accounting and mathematics and geometry. And he was able to maximize those strengths and what he had learned to develop a kind of a very hands-on approach to his business and to learn, practically speaking, how technologies worked, how to experiment, how to keep careful accounts, and how to develop multi-layered ventures in his enterprises. So that practical education really served him well.
You do make the point that George Washington's power and contributions when it comes to this business lens is often overshadowed by Alexander Hamilton as the Secretary of Treasury. Why do you think that's the case, and what should we know about Washington's contribution when it comes to our economic growth?
It's odd that anybody overshadows Washington anywhere, but this is one place that it certainly happens, and Hamilton does overshadow Washington as a master of the economy or a master of finance, a Secretary of Treasury, of the Treasury. And part of that is, I think, because of Hamilton's fascinating and attractive personality, his undoubted brilliance. And maybe because people are just tired of assuming that Washington did everything. But in practical terms, Washington as president, first of all, Hamilton was not his first choice as Secretary of the Treasury. It was his second choice. But once he came on board, Washington set the strategy, and he set the goals of what he wanted to achieve. And he worked closely with Hamilton to implement those strategies and to find ways to make them happen. So Hamilton would come up with ideas of how to meet those goals, and Washington would work closely with him. And he rejected and came close to rejecting some of Hamilton's major policies, such as his Bank of the United States. Washington was about to veto it. They really worked in tandem rather than simply Washington telling Hamilton to go off and figure everything out for himself.
Was Washington a micromanager?
He was a detail guy. I used to call him a micromanager, but I think that's unfair because it implies an obsessiveness that he was afraid of losing control of every little detail. He kept track of details because, again, he was a hands-on learner. He wanted to know how things worked, but also because he understood the details mattered. You know, if you don't understand the fundamental aspects of things like pay and human resources and technologies, then you're just not going to be very successful. And there's also a contrast, say, with Washington and Jefferson. Jefferson was a micromanager and a detail guy, but he lost track of the big picture and ended up being the equivalent of $1.5 million in debt by the time he died. Washington was able simultaneously to keep the details and the big picture in view.
That idea of debt was something that horrified Washington, and you write in the book that it was really one of his hardest challenges to overcome because of the British culture that so many were coming from would often steer them toward dependency and debt.
It was a danger that Washington and all of his peers faced before the Revolution in terms of big American planters, farmers, businessmen. They had to work within the British credit system, which meant that they grew tobacco and they sold it through British agents and merchants overseas. And the British would give credit in return rather than cash. And Americans would then use that credit to buy manufactured goods, but often just to buy luxury items, and they'd end up deeply in debt. Washington saw himself falling into debt, which horrified him, as you point out, and decided to switch over all of his crops to wheat so that he could grow and sell on his own account as a merchant and receive cash in return that he could invest. That's how he freed himself from that debt.
As we point out, and as you point out in the book, he was a great businessman. His estate, however, fell into decline upon his death. What does that say about him? How did that happen? And does that cast a shadow of his accomplishments?
Well, it's unfortunate. His view was, and he ended his life one of the wealthiest men in America. His view was rather than hand down his whole estate in bulk to one or two heirs, that he would divide it up fairly equally among several heirs so that they would have enough, certainly, to be reasonably comfortable, but not enough that they could just sit on it and do nothing. He hoped that it would give each of them enough to build upon and to become wealthy in their own right. And he certainly tried to teach him those principles, but in reality, they turned out, most of them, to squander that wealth, and the estate fell into disrepair. It's unfortunate, and you look at Washington, he tried to be an involved father, an involved stepfather and step-grandfather, but his step-grandchildren kind of ran wild on him, and you have to wonder if maybe he spoiled them a little bit. It casts a little bit of a shadow, but I think we need to look more at Washington's own achievements rather than those of his heirs.
The name of the book, First Entrepreneur, How George Washington Built His and the Nation's Prosperity. It is published by DeCapo Press. Edward Wengel, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. Ed Wengel is the director of the Papers of George Washington at the University of Virginia and author of the new book, First Entrepreneur. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.